Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska is closing in on its 2019 budget, and lawmakers take a look at state alcohol policy. Stay tuned.
Local news is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. The Unalaska City Council meets tonight. At the regular session, councilors will review a final draft of the city's 2019 budget and decide whether to move it forward for adoption. They're also expected to honor student athletes who competed in the statewide Native Youth Olympics, as well as vote on scholarships for graduating high school seniors. The city council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. Last week, we brought you the story of Unalaska's unexpected ring seal sightings, but that Arctic species isn't the only one lounging in unusual places. As KDLG's Avery Lill reports, walrus are also hauling out near the Bristol Bay community of Port Hyden.
Port Hyden resident John Christensen was out for a four-wheeler ride on April 7th.
We went for a ride up the beach and ran into a large amount of walrus, a few hundred of them. We've never seen anything like this here before.
Over the course of a month, the residents saw more groups of the ungainly marine mammal resting on the shores, from Hook Lagoon to Stroganoff Point.
There has been an increase in the walruses. At first, there was only a few hundred and spotted pods all over the place. Now, there's more. And at the most, we've seen at distance, we couldn't get a good view from the distance we were at, but it looks like there's over 1,000.
That was on April 25th. On May 1st, just 1 week later, area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Bob Murphy, flew the shoreline from Pilot Point to Port Moeller.
We did see a group of about 100 walrus about 20 miles northeast of the village of Port Hyden on the beach. So we did see 100 animals where I've never seen 100 walrus hauled out before. Where they were, there was no cape or anything behind them. Usually walrus like to have a cape behind them sometimes. So these were just on a flat, sandy stretch of beach, and it just did not look like a typical walrus haul out. And it'll be interesting to see if they do stay there.
Walrus are guarded from harassment under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Harassment could include noise from fishing boats. When more than 1,000 walrus hauled out at Cape Gregg in 2016 and 2017, Fish and Game changed the Ugashik District South Line to allow the walrus a one-mile buffer zone. It's too early to rule out such a measure for the Alaska Peninsula area, or to know if the walrus will even be there when commercial salmon fishing starts more than a month from now.
It could just be something they're just staging there for a little bit or resting, and they're eventually going to go to their traditional haul-out areas. So we're just going to keep an eye on it and see if they disappear or if more show up or if they move around. The place that they were in is an area that is close to commercial salmon fishing, so I think if they stayed there, they would be, you know, with no obstructions to anything. But more than likely, I would expect that they may move.
According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, walrus have hauled out near Port Hyden before, but it's been about two decades, as Port Hyden residents wait to see if their new guests are here for the summer or just making a pit stop. They say that they're keeping their distance to ensure that they don't disturb the animals. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
The first people who came to Alaska likely trekked on foot across a land bridge during the last ice age. It's always been a bit of a mystery how they survived the long, dark winters that we still see today. But as APRN's Emily Russell reports, a new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences offers some clues into how the first Alaskans adapted to their new home.
The story of how the first Alaskans survived is really a story about moms and how they adapted to care for their babies in a harsh new world.
It shouldn't have happened. that Homo sapiens, our species, survived.
For thousands of years, the narrator of this PBS documentary says, humans fought impossible odds.
Our ancestors not only survived, they spread into every corner of the globe.
Including to Alaska. Sea levels were a lot lower during the last ice age. So, theory goes, humans crossed the Bering land bridge and settled here about 20,000 years ago.
It was probably a lot like what it is today. So not exactly a nice, warm, sunny place to live.
Leslia Lesko is an assistant professor of integrated biology at UC Berkeley.
It's basically organismal biology, but it's Berkeley. We had to try to be creative.
Lesko was asked to give a talk last year on human migration into the Americas. That got her thinking about genetics, specifically about one mysterious mutation that leads to thick, straight hair and shovel-shaped teeth. Those traits were found in the first Alaskans, but no one really knew why.
You know, you can wave your arms around and go, oh, you know, thick hair keeps you warm, or, you know, shovel-shaped incisors, you know, keeps your teeth from wearing down too fast.
But that wasn't all that convincing. So Lesko started thinking about vitamin D and sunlight. People living in higher latitudes evolved to have lighter skin, in part so they could soak up more vitamin D. But Lesko says at a certain latitude, like here in Alaska, it doesn't matter how light your skin is. There's just not enough sunlight.
So, you know, even if you were naked with really light skin, you're not going to make enough vitamin D to be healthy.
The first Alaskans had already started eating the vitamin D-rich diet that's still around today. Lots of fish and seals. That was one way of adapting.
When a culture changes its diet, everybody who's eating solid foods benefits from that.
Except, Lesko says, for babies. So how were they getting the vitamin D they needed? Well, it turns out the same mutation that leads to thicker hair and grooved teeth, it also leads to more ductal branching. That's the tiny tubes that branch out from a woman's nipple into her breasts.
They get finer and finer and finer and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Until, Lesko says, they reach the fat cells. Those tubes pull nutrients, including vitamin D, out of those fat cells and send them back through the mother's breast milk. Every woman has those tiny tubes, but Lesko thinks women in Alaska during the last ice age developed more of them, and that helped keep their babies healthy.
So it's shifted our thinking of this mutation as being a gene that influences hair or tooth shape to maybe the most important thing is that this is a gene that influences breast development.
Lesko says she and her colleagues found the gene in every one of the more than 3,000 remains they studied. And it's a mutation that a lot of women still carry today, not just in Alaska, but in Eastern Asia and in native populations throughout North and South America.
So if you run your tongue against the top teeth at the front of your mouth, if the back of them have little buttresses,
like little indents,
then you have shovel-shaped incisors.
And likely the same genetic mutation that helped the first Alaskan moms keep their babies healthy during the long, dark winters. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
The legislature is nearing the end of its session, and one thing that's not clear is whether lawmakers will completely revise state alcohol laws for the first time in 35 years. APRN's Andrew Kitchenman has more.
Getting alcohol producers, wholesalers, and retailers to agree can be a challenge. The concerns of groups that want to prevent and treat alcohol abuse make it even more complicated. But until last week, these groups were in agreement over the need to make changes. Here's Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki describing what went into the legislation to change the state's alcohol laws, known as Title IV.
We brought together a group of folks that perhaps don't always see eye to eye, and over an extensive series of meetings brought it to Title IV you see today, where they have agreed that this is the path forward for the industry.
Among the many changes the bill makes, it would adjust license fees to cover a bigger share of state costs to regulate alcohol sales. It would simplify the licenses that alcohol sellers must have. And it makes the penalties more consistent for businesses whose workers sell alcohol to minors. Until last week, it didn't address the divisive issue of how much breweries and distilleries can sell directly to the public as samples. But on Friday, the House Labor and Commerce Committee amended the bill. It dropped the amount of beer and liquor samples these businesses can sell by a third. Brandon Howard is the co-owner and founder of Amalga Distillery in Juneau. His business's tasting room has helped attract customers' interest since it opened nearly a year ago.
when they visit a brewery or a distillery, they expect to have an experience in a tasting room. And it's where we build our brand. It's where we establish ourselves.
Howard is concerned about the late change to the bill.
To come in and potentially undermine this bill that's been worked on by a steering committee over the last 6 years at the end of session is irresponsible, selfish. It's unconscionable.
But there are bar owners who support the change. They see the current laws that allow breweries and distilleries to serve alcohol as disturbing what was once an even playing field to one that's unfair. That's because bar owners have to pay many thousands of dollars for their licenses. Abby Williams is the co-owner of Louise Douglas Inn in Douglas. She says she expects competition with similar bars.
What I didn't expect when going into business and into debt by purchasing a beverage dispensary license and doing an extensive remodel on a building, that I would soon be competing with the manufacturers, those who manufacture or distill a bottle of liquor for an amount substantially less than the price I'm required to pay to the distributors.
The bill still has a couple of steps where it could be changed or stalled. It goes to the House Finance Committee next. Then it would face a vote on the House floor. And if the House passes it, the Senate, which has already passed it, will have to decide whether to agree to the House's changes and send it to Governor Bill Walker's desk. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.